Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and to the fastest growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission on this program is to reveal who is working against our interest, to understand how and why they are doing so. Because ultimately exposing and condemning such schemes, even when they're patriotic, even when they're political, especially when they're religious, isn't hateful. It's caring. Today in our second hour, we're going to reprise our Sports in the News segment with Aaron, who produces this program, and Scott, who previously produced this program. The topics are threefold in the Sports in the News segment. One is the insider trading allegations against Phil Mickelson. We'll take a contrarian view there. Second is the hearsay scandal with his arrest for driving while intoxicated and the large stash of illegal prescription painkillers in his car. And lastly, whether or not the Redskins name is racist, since I am Sioux Indian, I can even chime in on this with some personal authority. And then in our last hour, we're going to continue to discuss the differences between Yahusha, that is Jesus' actual name, Yahusha means Yahweh saves, and Paul, so that more people come to understand that if one was telling the truth, the other was lying. I don't suspect that we will cover all that there is to say about this story, the lead story today, over the next hour. There's, in fact, the person who sent me the story, of course, it's dominant in the news, but a good friend. And he said, there's something not quite right about all of this. And he begins by saying that the father who appeared at the White House next to the president of the United States, who was raised a Muslim, whose last name is Arabic, whose name is Arabic, and whose father was a Muslim, making him a Muslim by Islamic standards, gave a greeting at the White House. And the greeting that the father, a bearded man, really obviously uncomfortable with the dress code to appear at the White House with the president at a news conference, said, in the name of God, most gracious, most merciful. It's the line that has been added to each of the Quran's surahs. I think except the ninth surah. It is an Islamic greeting. Why would the father, especially now that his son has been released and is in a medical facility a long way from Afghanistan, why would his son, or why would his father, give an Islamic greeting? In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful. It's interesting with the Islamic greeting. Allah in the Quran comes off as a thug. He is, there is nothing merciful about him. He is first into predestination. With predestination, there can be no mercy. Second, he spends all of his time in hell. Every time that Allah is depicted in the Quran, he is in hell torturing those that didn't surrender to him, that didn't submit to him. So there's certainly no mercy nor grace, even if we take the English definition, supposed to the history of the word, there. The only thing that would be grace about Allah is that grace is actually a transliteration of gratia. The gratia are the Roman versions of the Greek charities. And the gratia and the charis, the charities, are naked goddesses that are were worshipped in both Rome and Greece by elitists in particular. They are the goddesses of hospitality, but not hospitality in terms of being welcomed into a family and home. No, this would be hospitality in the sense of throwing an orgy. They are the gods of licentiousness and sexual merriment. They are typically depicted in very hedonistic, indulgent settings. These aren't good little girls in the goddess realm. These would be the goddesses of sexuality, if you will. And so they do have a connection. So grace, gratia, would have a connection to Allah, and that the reward for engaging in murder in his cause, being a jihadist, is to be rewarded with multiple virgins in the Islamic paradise. The virgins could well be modeled after the Greek and Roman goddesses. The fact is, though, that the line is completely out of sync with the Quranic revelations. It was never part of any of the Quranic revelations. It was added to them later. And it was all designed to give Islam a mythos that it was a religion as opposed to a terrorist manifesto. And so the question is, first, why would the Father issue such a phrase? The next question that is interesting, by the way, the only rational answer for that is either he is a Muslim, or that he gave the impression of being supportive of Islam, knowing that the Taliban, a fundamentalist Islamic organization, had captured his son, and that the best way to appease them, to negotiate with them, is to feign being a Muslim. So either is a Muslim, or he's feigning being a Muslim. Neither which are good. Neither which are appropriate. I understand he loves his son, but neither of those approaches was wise. Nor was it appropriate to say that at the White House. It demeans America's character to speak out in the name of this horrid wannabe deity and this devilish religion. The next question that came up on this whole affair, before even reading the information regarding the nature of those who were released and the nature of how this young man came to be captured by the Taliban, was what in the world is the United States doing negotiating with those it claims to be terrorists? You know, doesn't the United States have a stated policy not to negotiate with terrorists? And when you negotiate with terrorists and you cut a deal like this, aren't you being hypocritical? Well, of course, the U.S. government is typically hypocritical. But this is pretty blatant. And lots of Republicans are now criticizing the administration for being hypocritical, for saying we will never negotiate with terrorists, and then obviously negotiating with them. It then brings to mind just the general issues surrounding whether or not it is appropriate to trade lives, freedom. You know, in Israel, I have been wholly opposed to trading the lives of Islamic terrorists in Israeli jails for as a precondition to peace, or even to trade them for a captured Israeli. And the situation there is more clear, even though the Israelis will do it, and sometimes releasing hundreds of Islamic terrorists and criminals for the release of a single innocent Israeli. Kind of tells you what the lives are worth. But all it does is encourages Muslims to kidnap more civilians to garner the release of more prisoners. And so it's counterproductive to do so. But we did talk on this program about the 225 remaining captives in Nigeria, that the Islamic group Boko Haram has not only kidnapped, but has tortured, has raped, and has systematically murdered some of them. And that would it be appropriate to trade members of Boko Haram that may be in prison, including the leader Abu Bakr's wife and children, who are custodians now of the in custody of the state, for the release of those girls? And in their case, you know, my answer would be absolutely. I would do so. And the moment the girls were free, even at the cost of collateral damage in the case of Boko Haram, recognizing that most that they're living with are supportive to them, I would turn the region where they are the most prevalent into glass. But I would make the trade in the case of those little girls, because what they're being subject to, they didn't volunteer for this. It is such a travesty that is being perpetrated upon them. Yes, I would trade to get them back. Now, in the case of a U.S. soldier, five Taliban in Guantanamo for one U.S. soldier, I might even make that trade. And we'll speak about why that trade might be legitimate. And then we have to get into the biggest issue. Who was this young man? How did he happen to be in Taliban custody? It's a very compelling story. And when we return to Shattering Myths, we'll continue to cover it. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. The situation as it relates to Taliban prisoners for a U.S. Army prisoner is really different than what you would normally encounter. Now, first of all, the fight with the Taliban is one that America initiated. The Taliban didn't attack America. You know, I know that there are lots of senators like John McClown of Arizona that are saying, you know, it's inappropriate to release these bloodthirsty terrorists back, five that are being released from Guantanamo, because they have the blood of Americans on their hands. Well, no, John, it's you that have the blood of those Americans on your hands. You're the one that sent them to Afghanistan to die. The Taliban didn't attack America. America attacked the Taliban. Matter of fact, the America was a huge sponsor of the Taliban. Now, back in Jimmy Carter's presidency, along with Zbigniew Brzezinski, his national security advisor, they came up with a harebrained plan that Gates, the former Secretary of Defense and former CIA director, now head of the Boy Scouts, quite a tribute, implemented, which was to rent the Taliban from the Pakistani government to give the Soviets a taste of what they had given us in Vietnam. In other words, to fight a proxy war against them. And we used the Taliban to accomplish that. The Taliban was an American ally in that war, not an American enemy. And so, you know, it's a very unique situation. We started this war. Now, for those that think that it's a response to 9/11, Taliban didn't have anything to do with 9/11. You know, Al-Qaeda wasn't even the brainchild of 9/11. It was conceived by Ramzi Youssef. He was already in U.S. Prisons at that time for the first bombing of the World Trade Center. It was his idea. He conceived it in the Philippines. We were given access to his computers and to his planning 5 years before 9/11 occurred in 2001. Way back in 1995, 1996. And so it wasn't an Al-Qaeda plan. It wasn't perpetrated by Al-Qaeda. And the Taliban most certainly had nothing to do with it. And yet we invaded Afghanistan to depose the Taliban government. We started this fight. And if you're going to declare war on the Taliban, which we've done, then the prisoners aren't criminals. They're prisoners of war. And they ought to be treated with the same kind of restraint that you would apply to any prisoner of war. And yet we don't. We're in this mixed realm of wanting to treat them as criminals as opposed to prisoners of war. And so if they simply are prisoners of war, then an exchange is just fine. It's appropriate. If they're common criminals, then what are we doing fighting them as if we're at war with them? And there's big issues here. And how in the world do you allow Americans to stay in Afghanistan now that you've demonstrated that you're willing to trade one American for five Taliban officers? I mean, the security of Americans in Afghanistan is now torn asunder. You can't in good conscience leave them there. Never mind the fact that we spend billions of dollars supporting their effort, and they've accomplished nothing worthwhile. The whole invasion of Afghanistan has made a bad situation worse at the cost of enormous fortune and blood. But now that you've made this deal, you can't in good conscience keep them there. Even if you are a dunderhead and you don't recognize that our invasion of Afghanistan made a bad situation worse, and that we ought never have invaded, and the moment we recognize that it was counterproductive, we should have left 11 years ago, then at least realize that once you start trading, as we have just done, no American is safe. You need to withdraw them under these circumstances. That's why prisoner exchanges typically take place after a war has been concluded, not during the war. We'll return to Shattering Myths and then turn our attention to the uniqueness of this man's story. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. U.S. Senator Harry Reid of Nevada, the top Senate Democrat in a country where everyone toes their party line, described the moment as a great day for the United States. So the United States negotiates with terrorists, trades five known terrorists for what appears to be an army deserter that's already cost America at least a half a dozen lives, maybe more. And it's a great day to America. He said it's his return marks the nation's commitment to leave no service member behind. But the fact is, this man left his country behind. He was disgusted by America's mission in Afghanistan. He wanted to leave. He left. He left his country behind. Now, I'm not judging him for doing so. And I think it's important that anyone who has a child that's considering entering the military understand that once you engage in the military, you do not have free will. You can come to know that the mission is deplorable and you can't leave. He came to know that the mission was deplorable and he left. Now, the fact is not everyone is so jubilant. U.S. Representative Mike Rogers, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, as if that's not an oxymoron, said that he was pleased by Bergdahl's, that's the man's name, release, but he was extremely troubled by how the United States negotiated with the Taliban to reduce Bergdahl in exchange for five detainees at Guantanamo Bay. Quote, "This fundamental shift in U.S. policy signals to terrorists around the world a greater incentive to take U.S. hostages," said Rogers, a Republican from Michigan. Absolutely, it does. Now, first of all, we have to be careful of referring to the detainees in Guantanamo Bay as terrorists, as if they've been incarcerated on criminal charges. If we're at war with the Taliban, which is the only reason for us invading Afghanistan, the only reason for staying in Afghanistan, if we're at war with them, then they're not criminals, they're prisoners of war. And we ought to be careful in our definitions, otherwise we look really stupid in this whole discussion. But it is true. You know, the United States has a conniption fit over the release of information by Snowden saying that it puts American lives at jeopardy, which it didn't. It revealed that the country had squandered American liberty and freedom and squandered the rule of its constitution. But in this case, what the president did puts American lives at jeopardy. Every American's life right now is at greater risk because of what the president of the United States did. Every single life. Because now there is a known precedent that if you have an American, you can get five desired prisoners released. So the incentive to kidnap went up dramatically. For all Americans, particularly those Americans living abroad in an Islamic country. If you are an embassy worker in an Islamic country, right now your freedom isn't worth a nickel. He went on to say, "Further, I have little confidence in the security assurances regarding the movement and activities of the now released Taliban leaders. And I have even less confidence in this administration's willingness to ensure that they are enforced. I believe this decision will threaten the lives of American soldiers for years to come." I'm really not greatly concerned about the lives of American soldiers. They ought not be in Afghanistan. My concern for their lives is such to bring them back home. If they want to play in Afghanistan, then they have chosen to put their lives in harm's way for reasons that have nothing to do with American liberty, American freedom, American protection. There's no threat to America in Afghanistan. And so the reality is it doesn't put the lives, well, it puts the lives of American soldiers at greater risk, actually not their lives, but their freedom. And mind you, if they're in the U.S. military, they have no freedom. So all it does is it transfers one captor from one captor to another. But the reality is that it's non-soldiers, it's civilians whose lives now are at risk. Not to death. There is no trading a dead body for five captives. So it has nothing to do with the lives of these individuals. It has all to do with their freedom. So civilians that have freedom now have their freedom exposed. They're vastly more vulnerable to kidnap. And soldiers simply have one group versus another telling them what they can and can't do. Now, here's another article. This one's just fascinating. This is CNN's lead story. It says the sense of pride expressed by officials of the Obama administration at the release of Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl is not shared by many of those who served with him. In fact, I would say it's not shared by any of those who served with him, veterans and soldiers who called him a deserter, whose selfish act ended up costing the lives of better men. The first quote is, "I was pissed off then, and I'm even more so now, with everything that's going on," said former Sergeant Matt Verkant, a member of Bergdahl's platoon, when he went missing on June 30th, 2009. Bo Bergdahl deserted during a time of war, and his fellow Americans lost their lives searching for him. Well, by the way, if we issued a declaration of war, who was it against? Was it against Islam? No. Was it against Afghanistan? It couldn't be. We're pretending that we went into Afghanistan to liberate them. So did we make a declaration of war against the Taliban? I mean, there is no Al-Qaeda left in Afghanistan. There never was Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Did we actually declare war against Al-Qaeda? And if so, then what are we still doing? Why did we invade Iraq? Because there were no Al-Qaeda in Iraq when we invaded. And what in the world are we still doing in Afghanistan? Because Al-Qaeda is not in Afghanistan anymore. There's only like a handful of members of Al-Qaeda, and they're all in Pakistan. What are we doing? When he says a time of war, what was the declaration of war? Who was it against? Who are we really fighting? Why? Now, the second part of this, did he desert? Yes, because he was disgusted with what America was doing. He was exposed to it, and he found it revolting, which is why so many returning vets, in fact, a total of 80 per day of American veterans are taking their lives through suicide. 80 a day. But that's the small number compared to those each day diagnosed with mental disorders associated with the moral conflicts they have been exposed to and witnessed. Now, this is a really huge problem. This man came to recognize it. He still had a conscience. It wasn't seared by propaganda. And he said, "The hell with it. I want out of here." But you don't have free will in the U.S. military. Understand, the U.S. military isn't about freedom. There is no freedom in the U.S. military. Verkant said Bergdahl needs not only to acknowledge his actions publicly, but face a military trial for desertion under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. By the way, there ought not be a military code of justice. The same laws that apply to everyone ought to apply to the military. The very fact that there is jurisprudence in the military is part of why our military is so corrupt today. So why sexual assault in the military is epidemic and growing, doubling just this past year. A reporter asked Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel Sunday whether Bergdahl had left his post without permission or deserted, and if so, whether he would be punished. Hagel wouldn't answer the question directly. He said our first priority is assuring his well-being and his health and getting him returned to his family. Other circumstances that may develop and questions, well, those will be dealt with later. You know, the military is going to take the approach of, 5 years in captivity with the Taliban is more than enough punishment for going AWOL. But when we continue with this story, one of the things that we'll have to deal with is, were the Americans who were deployed to find him, six of whom died in the process, there to win his freedom? Were they going after him because they loved and adored him, and he was one of theirs, and they were going to save him, or they were going after him because he went AWOL? Were they hunting him or trying to rescue him? And all information is that they were hunting him, that they were trying to capture him so that they could imprison him for going AWOL. for deserting his post without permission. According to first-hand accounts from soldiers in his platoon, Bergdahl, while on guard duty, shed his weapons and walked off the observation post with nothing more than a compass, a knife, water, and a digital camera, along with his diary. At least six soldiers were killed in subsequent searches for Bergdahl, and many soldiers in his platoon said attacks seemed to increase against the United States in Paquita province in the days and weeks following his disappearance. Many of Bergdahl's fellow troops, from the seven or so who knew him best in his squad, to the larger group that comprised the 1st Battalion, 501st Infantry Regiment, 4th Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division, told CNN that they signed non-disclosure agreements, agreeing to never share any information about Bergdahl's disappearance and the efforts to recapture him. We will deal with those two facts when we return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Don't go away. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. That last line is truly amazing, that many of Bergdahl's fellow troops, A, were forced to sign non-disclosure agreements. What on earth doesn't the U.S. military want anyone to know? They're silencing the very people that are allegedly fighting for our right to free speech. They forced them to sign non-disclosure agreements regarding any information about Bergdahl's disappearance or the efforts to recapture him. Not to free him. You see, when these men were talking about what they were doing, it wasn't a rescue effort. It was an effort to recapture him. He had been in the custody of the U.S. military where he has no free will. He left. They had no idea that he was at that time a Taliban prisoner. They had no idea where he was. They just know he left. And yet they're using the term recapture him. They weren't out there trying to save this man. They were trying to get him in prison. Now, it is interesting that his emails reported by the late Michael Hastings and Rolling Stone in 2012 reveal that Bergdahl's fellow infantrymen learned within days of his disappearance that he told them that he no longer supported the United States effort in Afghanistan. By the way, you have to be absolutely out of your mind to support the United States effort in Afghanistan. You either are ignorant, you don't know the facts, or you're irrational. Or the third option, you're immoral. There is no way to be informed, rational, and moral and support what the United States has done in Afghanistan. We turned a bad situation into a worse situation at the cost of great wealth and great amount of lives. Now, let's consider what the man said. He said, and this is Bergdahl's comments to fellow infantrymen. He wrote them, quote, "The future is too good to waste on lies." Boy, is that the truth. The lies about Afghanistan and the propaganda and politics and the military, just deceit regarding Afghanistan is just nothing but a pile of lies. The future is too good to waste on a pile of lies, Bo wrote to his parents. And life is way too short to care for the damnation of others, as well as to spend it on helping fools with their ideas that are wrong. I have seen their ideas, and I am ashamed to even be an American. The horror of the self-righteous arrogance that they thrive in, it's all revolting. End quote. This is what he wrote to his parents. The future is too good to waste on lies. That's what America has done for centuries now. Deceive to encourage people to go to war. We've lied about every war we fought in. We've lied about why we're there. We've lied about what we're accomplishing. We've lied about the costs. The future is too good to waste on lies. And life is way too short to care for the damnation of others, as well as to spend it helping fools with their ideas that are wrong. I have seen their ideas, and I'm ashamed to even be an American. The horror of the self-righteous arrogance that they thrive in. It's all revolting. He had a conscience. He was able to process the information morally and rationally. He expressed that to his parents. What he wanted was out. He was looking at the mountains in the distance, and he said, if only I can get through those mountains, I can get to China. I can get out. Military wouldn't let him out. That's one of the problems with the military. Once you engage, there is no way out. They own you. He couldn't get out. He wanted out. He simply walked out. He dropped his weapons and walked out and headed to the mountains. Bergdahl wrote, I am sorry for everything. The horror that is America is disgusting. Is there any reason why we don't think about why the American troops were asked to sign non-disclosure agreements?